I'm also thinking about the idea of loops and the way in which the 16 millimeter projectors are running on these loops and these mechanisms. And so the idea is to take you through that experience. And so while at times it's very much reverie, it's about dreaming and those clouds that kind of come into it. And then to sort of actually then start to challenge that and to work with the idea of these blades, these windmill blades that start to literally cut. They start to cut and it starts to pick up space, starts to pick up speed, excuse me. And then what you're left with, as the sound starts to pick up as well, then you're left with this kind of experience of like being thrown around or churned around by these sort of these gigantic machines. And Andrew is sort of playing live to this as well. So he's taking some of those sounds from the projectors while also sort of creating some of his own as we try and find that sweet spot where we take people into that experience until you're finally spit out at the very end into this sort of this field of blue, you know?
Yes. Okay. That was a great description. And what is the actual full title of this piece? Just so I can introduce it properly in the radio later.
Sure. It's called Vientos Fuertes, which is Spanish for strong winds. And for me, it's kind of it's a bit of an homage, I would say, to this idea of Quixote and Cervantes, you know. And so giving it a Spanish title seemed quite fitting to talk about him in that way.
All right. I'm not going to break my tongue on Cervantes Spanish right now. So
no problem.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get you to say it and I'll record it and I'll just play back anytime it has to be said or something like that. So
nice,
we'll have our
strong
own
winds.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. great. So that was it. That's good because this is definitely a piece we're going to listen to after the talk, and it's a really beautiful piece that builds up through these 30 minutes of sound. And what I really like about it is as well is that you can really hear that sound of the projectors coming through.
Yeah.
You could hear that on the piece of plate very early in the program with the spoken word by Maria Glicka. You could hear in the beginning at the end the sound of the projector as well. I think you have to listen a little bit closely, but in this piece called The Strong Winds, then it should be obvious, and it's really nice to listen to it as well, I think, in the radio.
Great.
So I think we more or less got through my questions here. I do have one question. So you spoke a little bit about the windmills and your experience with that. Is there you also had another film in the piece, which is The Flowers. Again, it's a still life that it's hard to describe. They're really beautiful, these very staged kind of flowers.
I mean, in a way, it's interesting because the entire program is kind of bracketed on one side by a film of mine, and on the other side, a kind of a performance that I've created and collaborated with Andrew on. But this first film is almost the opposite, I would say, of the final film, Strong Winds, or the final film performance, Strong Winds, where it's really about looking. And it's about a very, very slow way of looking or observing something. And so that project, which is called Nature Mort, which again is a Latin name for still life. And as I was working on that piece, I've always been a big fan of Robert Mapplethorpe and his photographs. And sometimes people forget that he also took these beautiful photographs of flowers. And what I was doing with that piece is, technically speaking, I'm shooting film as Super 16 so that what's happening is the image is being taken all the way over into the optical soundtrack. And as I was sort of composing these floral still lives, I was also trying to compose them in ways that I knew would disrupt the optical soundtrack. So in a way, I was looking for sounds through images or images that could make sounds. And so in a way, this idea of composition, and we talk about composition in terms of music, we talk about it in terms of layout. I was very aware of how I was trying to compose floral still lives and then capture them on film so that they could make noise. While at the same time, those noises oftentimes are a bit, I mean, for lack of a better description, quite alien, sometimes aggressive, while at the same time, the flowers themselves are kind of very quiet and I would say traditionally beautiful, if I want to kind of try and go that way. I mean, they have a certain aesthetic. They're black and white. They're sort of lit in a certain way. They're very classical. And what's interesting, like, for example, there's one where I've filmed an orchid. It almost whispers. It's very strange. And so it's like, and I feel like sometimes, you know, you're in a weird way, you are capturing what the flowers might be saying, you know. And in a way, it's a language that we don't know, and how they begin to generate those noises through the film drives the whole thing forward. So at times other flowers are kind of quiet or still. Others seem sort of out of order with the sounds that are coming out of them. And for me, that was a really important part of that piece, to be able to understand that even though I could look for the sounds and be able to try and find things, I still never quite knew what that would actually sound like until the film itself got printed. And as part of a live performance, again, sort of to bring it into its sort of being, we are taking the live sort of feed from the projector, which are these sort of alien noises. And then I'm also then running those through different effect pedals, analog pedals, to be able to bring out other sounds. So in a way, I'm also playing with what they're saying, these flowers. And Andrew at the same time is also adding other textures on top of it. So again, it's taking a film that's been shown in lots of different ways. But for these performances, it's really about bringing that to life and being able to sort of adjust as we go through the live performance.
Yeah. Okay. That's a great description. Thank you very much. I've got a question more about one of the other films. I mean, I really enjoy the way how you sort of talk us through these films, and I think you answer a lot of questions while you describe them, actually, because for you, you talk as much about the description of the film as the history, as how it works as a material. And so it's really great. And I enjoyed that. And I'm going to ask you about one last film, which was really a surprise to me and somebody I don't know anything about. And that's why I'm asking you. And that's by the Japanese filmmaker Hiroshi Yamazaki.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was in New York and I came across that film, it was like Christmas Day. It was like the best gift ever, you know. It's one of those things that I knew his photographs. I'd known Yamazaki's photographs, his heliography series. And again, not that we all know everything, but I never knew that he had made these films. And again, when I came across this film, it reminded me a lot. I had done another piece quite a while ago called Black Sun. And that actually was done with the soundtrack by Rie Nakajima. And so I never knew that this piece was there. So suddenly when I was in this archive and I came across it, it's basically a time lapse, a 24-hour time lapse, with the camera kind of set on an angle so that the horizon is not flat or horizontal. It's on a diagonal. And what happens is over time, we just watch basically the Earth turn, and it's just magical. It's just so beautiful. It's so simple. And I think about, if I relate that to the Nature Mort piece, which is about just looking, observing, it has that same kind of feeling about it, of just staying in one place and allowing the world to sort of reveal its magic. And for that piece specifically, sound-wise, I think Andrew and I were kind of questioning what we were going to do with it. And I had actually worked in Seattle with a band called Kinski, and it had worked with another film project where they had created these ambient sounds, these ambient tracks. And what we're doing within this piece is we're moving back and forth between the Yamazaki piece, the soundtrack that's on that, which is very ambient, very drone-like, and this other piece, which is also very drone-like. We're kind of shifting those around, and we just feel like we wanted to move people through the space or through that experience. So while you are kind of watching the world turn, you're also able to sort of kind of delve in and out through those sounds that also give you a chance to breathe, because the program itself up to that point starts to build up to quite a loud crescendo, both visually and sonically. And this is almost a chance just to catch your breath. And, you know, you find beauty on either side of that, where you go through something and then you have that moment to just sort of just to breathe, to lay down, to take things in, and to reflect. And I think that film really does that for me. The film itself that we were using from the New York Public Library is it's aged quite poorly, so it's lost a lot of its color, so it's gone very pink. And the irony is, I've never actually seen the real film in terms of its color. It's very difficult to find. And again, that's going to be another trip to Japan probably at some point to do that. But what ended up happening, though, is that suddenly when you see a film for the first time, like anybody who sees a piece of work for the first time, in my mind, it's pink. It's got to be pink, and it works. And so for me, whatever that piece is in my mind, that's where it's held at, within this kind of this pinkish hue.
Interesting. It sounds, yeah. sounds delicate as well. I don't remember the hue. I remember the film very clearly, but not the.
Yeah. It's funny because I've seen some documentation, visual documentation of the show at other places, mm-hmm. and you realize how pink it is. Right. And it's a sign that the film has gone bad, basically, mm-hmm. and it's lost all of its color. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it does something. It's like putting a filter onto something. And, yeah. you know, and I think within the scope of that program that we've done, it was always really important for me to allow those films, which are live themselves, so they do lose, they do become degraded, they have a life of their own, especially after they've been shown so many times, that, again, to not try and deny that, it's not about sort of that ultra-high-definition image. It's actually kind of about the history of that work. It's about its aura, its soul, or whatever you want to call it. It has that, as opposed to just being about that perfect sort of video, you know, so very different.
Yeah, could you talk a little bit more about that, actually? Because, I mean, you are a little bit sort of the custodians as antiquarians of an almost obsolete technology. I mean, we've seen how in the later sort of 5-10 years that this whole medium has been very, very nearly sort of made impossible to work in and exist also again with everything, every part of the equipment probably degrading without anything new being made available anymore. What do you think about that? I mean, obviously you are very fond of the that particular quality and the image and all the material that exists in that medium.
Yeah,
is that what it is? I mean,
it's interesting because I think as an artist who works across a lot of different mediums, like I've never sort of I'm not like a diehard purist, but I think that these films do a certain thing that, say, video can't do, that, say, digital photography can't do. And for me, that thing is about that liveness and that sort of that presence that when you show a film through a film projector, it has a sculptural presence inside of a space. Again, for me, bringing those projectors out into the space to screen the films is as much a part of the film itself. So for me to recognize that showing something on film is about the experience as opposed to just watching it, that's for me oftentimes where film comes into it. And again, you know, when you look at a film projector, it is in itself kind of a beautiful object. At the show in Copenhagen, we invited people up after the show to come and have a look. And, you know, it's that thing that people want. They want to know. And, you know, I've done enough screenings where more people end up probably watching the film projector than the film. You know, they're more sort of engaged with the mechanism that does it, because maybe we're starting to get a little bit more out of touch with how things work. And in a weird way, a film projector, I drive a very old Volvo, and you can understand the engine. And there's a sense that, like, we can kind of understand what's actually happening there. Like it's a magician who's actually showing you their trick. And so, but the medium of film has become quite obsolete because of this thing. And, you know, for us to take this show on the road and to actually bring film projectors or to hire film projectors, we're lucky enough to have Jack Stevenson in Copenhagen to sort of get a few more projectors in as well. They are sort of big, heavy machines, and it is a labor of love to take these things with you. And I'm reminded a little bit as well. I mean, I've got a good friend named Dennis McNanny, who's in New York, and he actually was the invited artist for the first film program that we did there. And he talks about he plays in a couple of bands. And he struggles because he likes to take a live band with him. But then suddenly, you know, the next person who's on stage walks up with a laptop, and that's all that they have. And he kind of won't sacrifice that. And he says it's just really important to have all the musicians there and all the gear there, because that is part of the performance. It's part of the experience. And I think the same is true with something like this. You know, I couldn't just come in and give someone a file and then we play live. It's actually about the physicality of all of that. And film does provide that. You know, there is a preciousness. There is a sense of urgency when you're working with that medium. And I think that, for me, is the exciting bit.
That's an urgency. You think that the mechanism of that urgency, if you like, the immediacy can be there in digital, probably way easier actually, but you think it's the physicality and the way that it's maybe invisible to you, that's the difference.
Yeah. But again, when we talk about sort of the urgency or the immediacy, I think it's the liveness of the projection. Now, to shoot a film requires almost the opposite of digital, which is a weird sense of planning, a weird sense of not knowing. And again, maybe that in a way is the enjoyment of working with that medium specifically, the unknown that comes when you shoot with film. And even though it's, you know, a lot of us who shoot film or work in this way, you know what you're doing. But nonetheless, even after you shoot film, the fact that you have to give it away, you send it off to a lab, and then this thing that comes back to you isn't so immediate. And then again, for me, that's another important part about sort of shooting film, is it kind of requires a bit of patience. It's like I think about printmaking, and I really enjoy going into a print room because it slows you down in a way, and you don't have that immediate like, okay, now let's cut everything up, let's just do it really fast. You have to sort of follow a certain process to get a certain result, and even then you're still sometimes surprised when you do get that thing. So it's the combination of making a film, going out there and doing it, and then when you perform it live, that's when you're dealing with that kind of that immediacy. Because when you're doing something live, we don't have a chance to sort of stop and restart it. And again, with digital, you could sort of, you know, sort of quickly rewind or go back very quickly or to scrub through things. With film, once you've gone past that point, you've got to sort of stop everything and then rewind it. And it's a physicality that again, I think is important to understand, that, you know, what you are watching is quite fragile. You're precious. You're in the moment. And again, there's always that fear that something can go wrong. And I think, you know, sometimes that's maybe a little bit of a buzz as well, that you know, it might fail.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that very clearly here trying to operate this radio.
I love it.
Absolutely. I was going to say, I think what you're talking about is also something that has to do with you actually being out there in a place, like a real place. You're interested in locations and places. We're having an issue. Yeah.
That's great. I love it. We just had a technical glitch. This is great.
Okay, here it comes.
Be back.
That's the sound of knocking on wood. No more. So what I was going to say is that for me, it seems like what you're talking about here is also that kind of, I don't want to say responsibility, but something about the satisfaction of actually going to a real location, to being you out there, being somewhere, being at the bottom of those windmills, being in that industrial building, being in front of those flowers, wherever you are, to film the things with the camera and then follow it through all the way to the cinema. It seems maybe that's one of the key points from you.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think I have a labor of love. I mean, maybe it's part of this idea of the physicality of working. I still find pleasure in that. You know, again, part of my background, or the way that I made a living as an artist before I was teaching here at Greenwich, was, you know, I was a builder. I used to do physical work, and I still find enjoyment in that. And I think, you know, the pleasure of the physicality of something is to be able to travel somewhere, to be able to sort of, you know, to break a sweat. I, you know, lots of people maybe don't enjoy that, but that's something that I find really important in my life. As I go through it, maybe sometimes I'm a bit too defeatist. Maybe I set up too many obstacles to make my life more difficult. But again, there's something for me about sort of being able to take the physical and sort of present it in a way that oftentimes is maybe poetic or beautiful. And I think that's something that runs through a lot of my work anyways, you know, and so maybe that's just a resonance within my life and how I approach life too.
I mean, I think that's, I think this is the, that was a wonderful end credit, I think, because that really is, brings us back also to the how what you experience when you see the show and when you see the expanded cinema and your project, which is called Image Sounds. And,
yeah.
And that there I think you find that you do find a coherency within the program. It's quite wide ranging, I have to say, at all the time.
Yeah.
Listen, Jim, I think I want to say thank you, and thank you very much for talking to me here.
Because, great, and thank you. Thank you, Toby.
Really,
and
I really want to play some of the recording from Athens, and I think it needs, you know, you need to listen to it for a little bit of time, like
a little
while, not just like a few minutes, but
great.
So if we sort of wrap it up here, then we'll have time to really get into listening to that piece, and I think it deserves that because it's some excellent work, and you know. That's also a credit to Andrew Hill, who's been very much also in charge of the sound.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. He wished he could be here, but he's on a flight to New York right now. So, yeah. It would have been nice.
And I think he left you back at Greenwich to wrap up the year with your students. Huh?
Yeah, it's a bit crazy.
All right.
Well, listen, I want to thank you. Just want to give a shout out as a thank you to 68 Art Institute and to the Cinematheque for helping us put on that show there in Copenhagen. It was a great time, great experience, and we had such a nice time with friends and other artists. It's sort of that generosity that you feel when you go out into the world and you do struggle and you do strive, but everybody who was there was absolutely fantastic. So I just want to thank all those people that were part of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. 68 Art Institute is located here in Copenhagen in Gothersgade, just up from Cinematheket, and it's an interesting place. They do all kinds of stuff. It's not just film, it's all kinds of art, and it's worth visiting. I'm definitely going to come again and see what these people are up to. Okay, thank you so much, Jim. And
all right,
good,
thank you.
Evening. Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Og med dette så vil jeg sætte lyden af Image Sounds af Jim Hobbs og Andrew Hill på en optagelse fra Athen her i 2019. Den kommer her.
Kunstnersamtaler med Torbjørn Sagmann Andersen. Programmer med kunstnere og musikere om deres projekter, ideologier, vilkår og anekdoter. I samarbejde med The Lake og Bispebjerg Lokalradio.